Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
Hello and welcome back to A Bit of Insight. You know, it's good to be back behind the mic and even better to have you along for the ride. Today's episode is all about money, but not just dollars and cents. We're talking about the energy of money, the mindset around wealth, and the habits that help shape financial reality. If you've ever wrestled with money stress, felt stuck in old patterns, or wondered how to teach your kids what you never learned about money, this conversation is for you. Hey, everybody, I'm Lisa Mosby, the host of A Bit of Insight, your go-to space for wisdom, wealth, and wonder. You know, I want you to grab your favorite cup of coffee, settle in, and let's talk about rewiring wealth. Today's episode is a special one for me, not only because we're diving deep into money mindset and financial clarity, but I'm joined by a fellow author and purpose-driven powerhouse. I had the joy of walking alongside Chris in our authors group, and we both completed our books at the same time. So it's fun for me to get to actually talk to her about her process and how this went for her. You know, Christina Rodriguez is also known as Money Coach Chris. And she earned this title after supporting many families on their financial journey. And she's now stepped into being the wise woman and educating other folks, not just them, but actually developing programs for their children. Chris's passion and purpose, they meet at the intersection of money, mindset, and financial freedom. She is a financial educator. And she's also the founder of Money Clarity Co. Her brand new Rewire for Wealth book is helping readers to dismantle their limiting beliefs and build financial roots in confidence and clarity. She's also the creator of the Money Dating Game, a playful but powerful way to explore financial compatibility with your spouse and introduce your children to concepts that maybe we never grew up with. But she's not stopping at adults. You know, that's the important thing, is that I have experienced kids who don't know what coins are, what dollar bills are. You know, they do everything electronically. So we're missing out on something when it comes to educating our children. And that's why I wanted to bring Chris in here and have this conversation today. So please welcome Money Coach Chris, here to talk about rewiring wealth, shifting beliefs, building wealth, and teaching the next generation. Welcome, Chris. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
You know, this has been a wild ride. It's been a journey. We've had conversations before on here, but we're coming at it from a different perspective, you know, looking at this experience of how do we get into our head, take what we know with all of our years of experience and put it into a book format that people can understand, and keeping it simple. And it's been a bit of a wild ride. But what has your experience been about putting it into a book? Just kind of give us a summary. We'll go deeper into it. But how did you enjoy this process of doing that?
It was actually very therapeutic for myself, which I didn't realize that was going to come up for me. And because you know the journey and the process, I had written the entire book. I was like, I'm done. And then, you know, we joined this author's group because I wanted help. I joined the author's group because I wanted help to be able to like publish it and know how to market it and all of that. And when we joined the group, I ended up rewriting the whole thing from a different tone. And the biggest shift was when we had to figure out like who our ideal avatar was, like who are we writing the book for? And I had like the first version, I had the clients in my head, like I named them, I gave them an age. I was like, this is exactly who it is. And I had a couple in my mind of who I'm writing the book for. And then we got to a part of answering questions of what our reader would want to hear and how they would respond. And I was like, I don't know, but I know what I would say. And then that's when it shifted everything for me. So as I was writing it, I realized I ended up writing the book for myself. And even as somebody who's a financial expert, I have my challenges as well with money. And so for me, I wrote this book and created my financial attachment styles for me.
The word that kept coming up when I read the title, and we had talked about this before, neuroplasticity, rewiring the brain has to do with that neuroplasticity. And part of that process is your quiz that you just mentioned, the attachment styles, walking people through to identify what their behaviors are and what they think about, so that they where so you know where to take them on this journey, so that they're reading about their financial attachment styles. Tell me about how you develop that quiz, because I see it more and more often. It's not something that I've personally done, but I know I've walked through many of these quizzes, and you see, like, this is my body type. I'm an endomorph, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. And when you apply it to money, it gives it a whole new look at dollars and cents. When I actually read my archetype, my money styling, it was like, oh yeah, it totally makes sense. So tell us more about that quiz. Where did that come from, and how did you develop those attachment styles?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting story, and I love to share it because when I was doing a lot of research, there was a lot of me that was like, who am I to do this? Because I don't have a doctorate in psychology. Yeah, I know a lot about money. And what I know about psychology is the books I read and the internal work that I'm doing on myself with my psychologist. And I remember talking to my psychologist about it and saying, like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't have a doctorate in psychology. Maybe I should go get a doctorate in psychology. And she was like, no, that's massive imposter syndrome. She's like, and then she says, I have a doctorate in psychology and I think you should be doing this. And I had been doing research on the attachment styles, doing work on myself with attachment styles and then doing a lot of research on it. 'Cause I was like, well, what if this is what happens with money? Like when our brains are wired to do something, it's how our body protects ourselves, right? So the quiz came from, I found a lot of research that was actually done by people that do have doctorates in psychology and relating how their research. I found three different pages or three different publications where they were relating attachment styles to how people behave and manage money. And so I kind of put that together and try to like identify, well, what is this characteristics? What is this characteristics? And how do these people show up? And then I was looking at some of my clients. I did a lot of like trial and error. And how does this land? How does that land? And then being able to figure out how to do the quiz and rate it, I went through a whole bunch of different tests and quizzes that are out there already for like attachment style, love languages. Like how are these quizzes made? And I got some really smart people to help me do that. So, but a lot of the research comes from that has been going on for the last decade or so on how attachment styles affect how you deal with money.
Interesting. So, how does it rewire the brain just knowing that, that neuroplasticity? Like, there's something about awareness. Like, when we have the awareness of what our behaviors are, it's almost like the first step to making the change. And then, how do we actually step into making that change? Basically, you're summarizing the book for our audience with this concept here.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, us as humans, we have this wanting and needing of who am I? What box do I fit in? And once you can know something, and once you recognize why you do what you do, then you can be aware. You just become aware of it. And it doesn't mean something's right or wrong. For me, when I was doing all this work on the attachment styles and then financial attachment styles, it wasn't that whatever, if you came up as a security saver or an experience creator, neither is it's not right or wrong. This is just how you show up. So now, knowing what you are, let's create rules and boundaries for your money that's going to allow you to be more successful. So, or you can say, oh, I'm doing that thing I do all the time again. Why am I doing that? Oh, that's why. Because this is how I'm attached and wired for money. So now that I know how I'm wired, I can rewire by thinking like, ooh, do I really want that? Or let me put some boundaries and rules in place so that I can still accomplish the things that I want to accomplish.
I love how you tied that into the money dating game, because when you're having that conversation, you're like the likelihood of you being the same as your spouse is, practically zero. we have different experiences. We were raised differently. We come from different money backgrounds. Maybe your spouse has money and their family had money and your family didn't. You struggled. So we have different behaviors that we need to be able to communicate to our spouse, but a lot of times we don't even know where to start with that. How we have those conversations, how do you open the door for that? Tying in the money game and making it fun, helps to open up and create a relaxed environment for that conversation. Where did you get the inspiration for this? Because I think this is just brilliant. It was such a wonderful idea. And that came out first before the book. So that was my introduction to you, was through the money game. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so my money date game came actually from one of my people that one of my wonderful team members that helped me with my brand, my style, and my social media asked me one time to send her 20 questions that most people would ask, or how to get people to talk about money. And so I started thinking about these questions, and I would write them down, and then my brain, if I get very creative, and so I was like, okay, well, let me do 50. And then I was playing Cards Against Humanity. I don't know if you know that game, but I was like, it's a card game, and it's fun. And I'm not saying that my money date game is as fun as Cards Against Humanity, but it is a card game that people play, and it gets you talking, gets you engaging. So I was like, what if I created a game like that for money? And that way you could talk to your partner or maybe a group of friends and start having conversations about money in a non-judgmental way, but having prompts to help you with what questions to even ask.
Yeah. So how do we how do the emotions behind money and our upbringing of our money kind of shape us? Like, can we overcome some of those negative habits? How difficult is it to get on the same page? As you've, I guess basically, do you have a case study? Like, are there people that you've seen using these tools transform their relationship with money? And I think you've even said something about it saved your relationship. You've talked about how being able to understand your spouse's money mindset helped in your relationship. So sh shed some light on that for folks, please.
Yeah, I will. So, I'll use me and my husband, Ronnie. I am a experience creator first, practical provider second, and he is a full-on freedom facilitator, which means he doesn't want anybody telling him what to do with anything. And I want to experience life, and if I have any money in the bank, I'm like, yeah, let's go do this. But at the same time, I struggle with like, but everything needs to be in order first, and then we can, oh yeah, let's go do this and let's go do that. And so we had this, we didn't talk about it a lot. I had my stuff, he had his stuff, and this is our second marriage for both of us. And so we didn't really have any kind of plans or goals together. We didn't really talk about money. It was, hey, we have it, let's do this. Hey, this is your money, this is my money, let's do these things. With also, we'd always say, like, well, it's our money. There was always that, but like deep down and deep rooted, we didn't talk about certain things or why do we do things. So we started having money dates. We played the money date game, started asking each other questions. But really, once we understood our attachment styles, it allowed both of us to say, oh, you're just protecting your wiring. Because he would always like, oh, I don't need to know that. I don't need to know that. And I'd be like, yes, you do. And especially as a financial planner, I'm like, you do need to know things. I want to show you all the things. But now I understand that. And so now we meet on a monthly basis. We go through everything. We set our financial goals. We say, hey, this is what we spent. Here's why. And it's really helped us talk a lot more. And what's interesting is when you can talk in a non-judgmental way as a couple about money, you can talk about anything. So it's opened us up to talking about more than just money, which has been phenomenal. And that's what really changed us.
Yeah, the depth of our relationships, because you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes, not all of us want to go to therapy or, air their dirty laundry and that kind of thing, but be able to create the space and the environment. And you even tell people in the, how to create the environment before they play the game and build some rules around how you play the game. So I think that's fascinating. The next step, of course, you've got all of these things in line. I don't, I have the book and I'm working in that direction, but you created two courses. One is the course for adults. How does that help people move through this process? Do they do the money game first? Do they read the book first? Do they do the course? Is there a natural flow so that people can maximize and get the most out of what all the things are that you offer?
So that's a great question. And it's kind of like I've had people do all different ways. And I think all three together is what makes everything powerful. So whether you read the book first to really understand the emotional wiring behind everything, or you start the course, because there's a little bit of that in the course as well. And then you have the game as a tool and resource to just kind of amplify and help you communicate with your partner a little bit better. I would say the best thing would be read the book, do the course, and also have the game while you're doing all of that. because understanding how you're wired is one thing. So now that we understand what our financial attachment style is, now then we can create rules and boundaries, which is a lot of the course. Like, so understanding our attachment to money, how we see money, we kind of find out that wiring first. Then the course takes you through a session of figuring out where you want to go, and then also getting very, very clear on where you are now. And then we can create rules and boundaries so that you become financially successful and feel fulfilled. And that was the part that was always missing in my financial planning practice. I would work with clients who were making millions a year and just not fulfilled. I always tell people it doesn't matter if you're making 30,000 a year, 30,000 a month, or 300,000 a month. The zeros don't mean anything because you can manage money well or you can manage money not well. And you can be broke at all different levels, living paycheck to paycheck at all of those different levels. So really, the understanding how you're wired and how what your financial attachment is will help you rewire your habits so that you can make better or create better financial habits. That's how I want to say it.
And that really is what it comes down to. When I was married, I always ran the household. But then when I became single, I was so afraid to even open up and look at the budget, to actually write down what my spending was. Like, I had no control of it because, just everything had changed. And then there's one income, and the stressors just went through the roof. But burying the head in the sand was the easiest thing to do. And sometimes we do that. We don't continue to do the things that made us successful when we have tragedy, or when we have, life experiences that change things. And I think learning how to handle and manage those things and not bury your head in the sand and create those boundaries is really what helps folks to, set a course for the future, set a course for that financial freedom, and have a plan that they can work, that works within their personality, that you don't feel that you want to run from. And I think that's the beauty of what I see coming out of how you're working with adults. The piece that I love the most that you're doing, and I know this is still in beta testing, is your kids program. Your money education for kids, and you've been working with a teacher, and I believe it was a fifth grade class. How is that conversation different with educating the kids than what you've been doing with adults?
It's a lot more fun.
Oh, and that speaks my language.
It's a lot more fun. They ask a lot of interesting questions,
Yeah.
and I had to do a lot of research with some of their questions that they had, because it was, they'd ask questions like, "Where, when was money invented?" And so I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And I found out it was invented in the 14th century by the Romans. And so understanding the history of money and why it was made up. I have the saying that everything's made up, and even and including money. And so talking with kids, we go through the what even is money? Like, is it paper? Is it valuable? Is it not valuable? All the different ways that we can spend money, through bills, coins, cards, now just tapping your phone. And that right there, what there's a lot missing. Because I don't know if you remember, Lisa, but remember back in the day when we'd have a check register and we'd have to like write down all of our expenses, and then balance our checkbook. Well, you don't have that today because everything is tap, 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 and you go through, you have all these apps that help you see what you spent and all that stuff. And all of that is great, but I still find, and maybe it's because how I'm wired, I created a spreadsheet that helps me write everything down. So when you're doing that exercise, you're being more aware. And I don't know what it was because I would see on QuickBooks, like, oh, I spend this much money on that. Okay. But when I'm writing it down and seeing it consistently, I was like, oh, why am I doing that? So kids, when we're talking about these things and the age that they're in, this digital age, and that's why I feel like helping them become wired well with wealth is going to be very important. And so it's been a wonderful experience, and I'm working on some card games for kids, all the different ages as well. And I have two different sets of books coming. I know you know about one. That's for younger kids, and that's like with characters and things like that. And I'm excited about that one. And then I'm also doing a second edition of my Rewired for Wealth book. I'm reframing it for teens, so that they could be wired well for wealth. So that will be coming out probably before the other kids' character books come out, because I am still doing some testing, and it's a little bit more difficult to test with kids too, because you got to see how things land and make sure that they understand it. And they ask so many questions that make you think like, oh, I don't know, let me go research that a little bit more.
Besides the when was money invented, are there any other insights that you had gained from the research, from the kids asking the questions?
Yeah, it really tells you a lot about their family. So, and that's where I was like, ooh, a lot of this comes from because of the questions that they asked. There was like one kid, and like there's two different classes, and there was one kid that was all about investing. Fifth grader, oh, I'm gonna invest this money. A lot of other kids were like, oh, I'm gonna bet that money. I'm gonna go do like. I was just like, where do you get this stuff from? Or I have to hide my money, or I have to like, and it's starting now. It's starting when they're little. Like all these wirings they see from their parents, grandparents, society, brothers and sisters. And it was great too because I got to see some kids that were in foster families and where they get this stuff from. So it's been very eye-opening, and it says a lot about however we grow up, the things that we learn, not just about money, but anything in general, it comes from what we're observing more than what we're hearing.
Behavior speaks louder than words. 80% of our communication is behavior. I don't know that if that number even is still true, but I know that there, back in the day, when I was in the psychology field of sales, we talked about how behavior was the best communication is watching body language, watch the behaviors, and that's what we learn from too as kids. Is there a particular message, like a key message that you want to deliver to the next generation through your kids' books and your books for teens?
I think awareness would be a key message. Just be aware of how you want to live. We focus so much on creating money, making money, six figures, seven figures, whatever. The zeros behind the number doesn't matter. What matters is how you want to show up, how you want to live, what you want to accomplish, because you can do a lot with a little bit. And to look at money as a tool and resource and not something that gives you power.
This past weekend was a holiday weekend, 4th of July, and I got to spend it with some family. And a couple of the kids there were college kids. And there's the young lady and her boyfriend was there, and they are living together, and they're talking about buying real estate and cohabit this new term. It's called cohabitation rentals, where you may have a three or four bedroom house and you rent to three or four different people that live in that house. So they have shared resources, but then they have their individual rooms. And it's a new trend that is taking place, or it's new to me, I should say. I don't know how long it's been around, but getting to sit with them. Here they are in their early 20s, and they're talking about buying real estate, and they're still renting, and they want to put their money into this. And they're talking about different types of investments, and they're talking about Bitcoin different currencies. And I was just fascinated. I'm sorry to say, that was not me. I did have my real estate license when I was 18, and I was aware of investing, and I was working in that field. But most of the youth that I meet today, that is not necessarily where their mindset is, where their head is at. Mom and dad are providing, and my generation, those would be kids that would be my age if I had kids, and we've provided so much for our kids, but I don't feel like I see a lot of providing of education or learning to invest or planning for the future at that age. Maybe out of college when you already graduated, but yeah, they're so young, and I was just, my eyes were wide open, and my ears were like, tell me more, tell me more. Where's this philosophy coming from, and how do you see this happening? So it almost seems like maybe there's a shift happening, that people are aware that we don't have retirement, we can't depend on Social Security necessarily. How am I going to plan for the future? And I've met several people during that event, several young people that they're actually having those conversations and talking about it. So here's the question. Generational wealth, because we're going to see this huge, massive shift of generational wealth, the pass down to the next generation. And it's probably going to skip, the boomers are going to skip, their kids, and they're going to pass it to their grandkids. So how do we manage passing down that generational wealth versus the generational wisdom? Because these young kids are going to inherit, some of them are going to inherit a big old pile of money, and they're going to just spend like crazy, buy like crazy, and not necessarily know how to invest, plan for future, make sure that they're creating legacy income, having income left to pass on to their kids. Where does that generational wealth versus generational wisdom come into play? And how do we steward the money that we have today and be responsible in passing this forward to the next generations?
Yeah, so that's where we're talking about it. So I say emotional intelligence equals financial empowerment. So passing down the emotional intelligence around money. And the generation that you're talking about, the older teens, young 20-year-olds, there's a lot of TikTok influencers out there talking about investing now. And there's a lot for kids investing. And there's different ways. And actually, I haven't finished reading it yet, but part of that big, beautiful bill, there's going to be some accounts that it's going to be a little pilot program where kids born in 2025 to 2028, the parents can request $1,000 from the government to start these pilot accounts for kids. And if you're not born, if you're a kid now under 18, you can open up these accounts now, and your parents can contribute up to $5,000 per year. So it's going to, the way I'm reading it, and I have to do more research, but the way I'm reading it is these accounts are going to work very similarly to a Roth IRA. And with Roth IRAs, you can have one if you have earned income. So kids usually don't have earned income. And so this is a way that kids can start making money or investing at age zero. And it can grow, and they can't touch this money until they're 18. And then at 18, they can touch it for education, starting a small business, a home. And then I have to get clarity on the next age, but then there's a later age that they can then touch more of the money, which I love. And I think that right there, that's one part of this big, beautiful bill that they call that I really like, because it's going to, I feel like, educate more people on investing. And for me, generational legacy and generational wealth, I wrote about this in my book too, is the legacy that you're passing down isn't just money, but it's your behavior and your emotional intelligence around money as well. So in my book, I have a chapter on writing your legacy letter, and not just like what you want to leave financially, but what you want to leave intellectually. with your attachment styles and with your financial attachment styles and what you're letting go and what you're passing on. A lot of people our age, Lisa, are the change makers, and we're giving that to our kids. And I see it half and half, right? There's some that aren't on that trend, and there's a lot of people that are. And I really feel like it is up to us to help these young folks with these changes and understand that it's not like money is important. And I want it to be used as a tool and resource, and we should talk about it. We were always taught to not talk about it. And this is where my passion came from. Why can't we talk about it? Why can't we talk to little kids? My kids are older, 20 and 25, and my sister's kids are 8. There's twins that are 8, and then a 5-year-old. And I'm already talking to them about money and the way that they hear it and listen to it. And that's why I'm excited about the other things I have coming later this year to help kids. And then, so then my goal is by next year, I have stuff for little kids as young as 7, and then different age groups along the way, and then into adulthood and in different ways and different formats so that people can understand how they're wired with money so that they can create better plans, rules, and boundaries for their money to be successful and understand the emotional intelligence around finance even more than just how to do the things. Because there's a lot of how-tos. And with AI right now, AI can do a lot of the how-tos with you. So I want to bring the humanness into it and help people to be aware of how they're wired with money and be aware of their financial emotional intelligence.
Yeah. You kind of stepped over it a little bit about the myths. I know you love to bust myths, and yeah, some of the myths that come to mind for me are you have to work hard to be rich, or debt is always bad, or the one that I always go back to that I've heard my mom say often was, I had to rob Peter to pay Paul. Like she'd borrow from this credit card to pay for that, pay off that credit card in the early years when when kids were young. And those were my formative years of money, and you had to work hard in order to be rich. And so I have a really good hardworking work ethic, and kind of lose sight of we need self-care, we need to take time for ourselves, and we don't have to, every minute of every day isn't focused on working and making money. So, what are some myths that you've been known for myth busting?
Well, your first one, work hard. You have to work hard to make money. Absolutely not. You have to work smart to make money. You get paid more money for what's in between your ears than you do for what your hands can do. That's your intellectual property, and that is worth a lot. So that's a big one. The other thing is everything has to be hard. No, it doesn't. It can be easy. If we can leverage people and collaborate and leverage money, going back to the all debt is bad. No, it's not. Not all debt is bad. Sometimes you want to leverage. I use the word leverage over having debt when it's a good thing to do. So when you can leverage somebody else's money for a very low cost to be able to create income, a business, something, invent something. To me, that's the best kind of debt to have when you can leverage somebody else's money. We still want to be careful for the bad stuff that's out there. But so I want to say with I have three things to say when I speak a lot. One is everything is made up. Two, there are no rules. And three, no one is in charge. And so if that's true, we get to create the life that we want to live. We create the rules that we live by, and our rules dictate who's in charge of us. And I think about that over and over and over. And a lot of things that I'm doing now is, why does it have to be so hard? I want to make it easy because I don't believe that things have to be hard. I believe that things can be super easy. And I don't believe that we have to work really hard to make a lot of money because I've worked really hard and didn't make a lot of money. And then now I'm working way less and making way more. So to me, that's the way that I want to, that's what I want to pass down. That's what I want to pass down to my kids is work smarter. Find a challenge in the world that needs to be solved, a problem that needs to be solved, or find something that you're passionate about or that you're good at. And then understanding how you want to live your life, because we don't all want to live the same way, which is beautiful and great, and go after that.
I think that, for me, I'm shifting into that build your lifestyle. What is it that you want to do with your life? How do you want to live it? It's not just about your bank account. You know, I want the freedom to travel. I have to be able to afford to travel. Do I want to travel and stay in five-star hotels, or do I want to stay in campgrounds? Do I want to backpack, or do I want to fly first class? You know, those are the decisions that we make around the desired lifestyle. And so I have to allocate my hours, my resources, my time to make the appropriate amount of money to live the lifestyle that I want. And so shifting into the mindset of lifestyle and not just work, 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 get married, have babies, retire, and you know, play with the grandkids. I think there's so much that many families, many individuals and families miss out because they don't plan for that lifestyle and they don't actually bring that into the conversation. We just kind of trudge along and live life one experience at a time rather than planning for it and drawing in and attracting those things that we want to have in our life. One other, we're getting close to our time here. I do want to come back into the modern time. I forgot to ask this when we were talking about kids. Modern times, teaching kids about digital currency, spending and saving. You touched on it a little bit where, you know, we keep track in a register. I do have a Excel spreadsheet budget. I'm looking at some different apps that may pull in Venmo and pull in PayPal and pull in all of the places where I spend so I can see it in one place. Because you're right, I get paid through four or five different, you know, Wise, Stripe, Venmo, PayPal, and the income comes in, and then it just kind of gets dumped into the bank account. And if we're not balancing that, and we're not balancing the business credit card, the personal credit card, and tying all those things together, you know, it gets lost. Like, it's been a challenge for me because I used to have a team of people that did accounting, and now I'm doing a lot of that stuff myself. How do we talk to adults and kids in these digital times when we're talking about currency spending and saving, you know, explaining Venmo, explaining digital banking, and even investing, using like those apps where you just put in the cents, you spent something and just the cents get invested. Can you shed a little bit of light on that before we wrap this up?
Yeah, for sure. And so with that, I'm a big fan of parents or guardians paying kids as young as 7 or 8 an allowance. Call it whatever you want. I'm not going to tell people how to parent, but an allowance, that's the word I'm going to use. But in how they earn that allowance is up to the family, right? But teaching kids how to manage money early on, saying, here's your money. And how much are we going to save, give, spend? And then in our saving bucket, what are we doing with that? Giving and then spending. But then also in our digital age that we have now, I'm a big fan of checking your bank account every day. Because if you can't see it and something happens, especially with all the fraud and all that kind of stuff, you need to be on top of it. So I have a practice of checking the account every morning. Hey, what came in? What went out? And then once a month, I'm really deep diving into it. But you've got to be aware of what you're spending. And so checking all the time, but teaching kids by letting them do it. And when my kids were younger, I would give them allowances, and that allowance would include enough money for their lunch account, for whatever it was that I was always paying for them anyway. And they had to pay for it. And then they had to save money, and they were really great at it. My son is a little bit better than my daughter, but they're different people. So managing that as well, and just teaching kids and adults that don't understand the digital currency. First, digital currency is different than cryptocurrency. So digital currency is just like you're tapping your phone, you're tapping your watch, you tap your card now. It's a different thing than just handing out dollar bills, right? So it affects our brain differently. It's almost like gamifying it because you hear a ding, ding. Okay, I'm done. Ding, I'm done. So you just check out easy. And then it's not until you get the statement that you're like, oh, so if you're not paying attention every day, then you're not really aware of what's happening. And that's why my biggest piece of advice there is teach kids young how to manage their own money, because when they have to spend their own money on stuff, they're going to make different choices. Talk as a family of what your financial goals are so that you can say, hey, when a kid says, oh, I want these new shoes, and then maybe that's not in our plan right now, say, hey, tell them things like, well, if you get the shoes now, then that means that this over here that we all want to do as a family is going to get delayed. right? So giving them choices that they have to make. So they have to do critical thinking young so that they can make these better choices as they get older. And then even as adults, sometimes we were never taught that, right? So it's that instant gratification thing. And that's the biggest thing. So creating rules like, because of my experience creator financial attachment style, I have a rule of if I want to book a trip, if I want to do something, if I'm going to spend money, I have a 24-hour pause. I'm like, okay, let me think about it first. Let me make sure that's something that I'm doing. Am I feeding that emotion right now, or is this something that's actually going to better my life? Right. So, starting young, watching your money every day, and having rules and boundaries and following your goals.
I love that. Yeah, that really kind of wraps it up, ties it all up. I'm an experience creator too. I just like,
That's why you
of
love
course.
to
Where am I
travel.
traveling to next? And can I afford that ticket? You know, yeah. Oh, this was a great conversation. Yeah, you covered all of my questions, everything that had popped into my head, things that I wanted to know, but that I had extracted from the book. Is there anything I didn't ask that you wanted to share with the audience before we wrap up?
No, but buy my book. It's on Amazon, Rewired for Wealth. It's out as an ebook right now, and the paperback version is coming within the next 30 days. And then follow me, go to my website, Money Clarity. MoneyClarityCo.com. And I have a community. I have so many tools and resources out there for people. My mission is to change how the world sees money. And so the more people that can come on board and learn your financial attachment style, understand the emotional intelligence around money and your behaviors, we're going to have a better financial life, I think.
The country will be in a better financial position if we start educating people. Yeah. Love that. All right, you guys, I hope that you had a takeaway. Let us know what your favorite takeaway is. You can leave it in the comments for wherever you are watching this show. We'd love to hear from you and come on back next week. It's been my pleasure to serve you and be your host of A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.